LinkedIn presents.
From entrepreneurship to global business leadership, from challenges to self-discovery, to our ever-changing future, what separates those who win and those who get passed by? This is the Yes Factor with Winnie Sun.
Do you remember when you were 18 years old? Maybe that's when you got your first credit card. Maybe it's when you packed your bag and headed off to school. Well, at 18 years old, Maggie Boyne decides to take a gap year before attending college. She travels halfway around the world to Nepal, and she's so inspired by the people that she meets there that she boldly decides that, at really it feels like a blink of an eye, that she's going to make a difference in a child's life. Right there, right then, she calls and asks her parents to wire her the $5,000 that she earned from lots of years of babysitting. Maggie is now the co-founder and CEO of Blink Now. She was named Glamour Magazine's Woman of the Year and was used as an example for her groundbreaking work at the Forbes 400 Summit on Philanthropy. Shortly after, she was named CNN Hero of the Year. Her work has been highlighted by the Dalai Lama. The story of Blink Now's beginnings has been featured on the Huffington Post, VH1, MTV, and DoSomething.org. She is a young mother of, 58? Don't worry, we're going to explain. Her new book is titled Between the Mountain and the Sky, and this is her story. Meet Maggie.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Winnie.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And actually, I'm really happy to hear. I guess you're enjoying this nice weather that we're having here. You're in Southern California today. Well, welcome. Well, let's share a little bit about you, Maggie. I mean, this is so impressive. Maggie was named Glamour Magazine's Woman of the Year. She was also used as an example for her groundbreaking work at the Forbes 400 Summit in Philanthropy. What an incredible recognition. In 2015, she was also named CNN Hero of the Year. So her work has also been highlighted by the Dalai Lama, among many others. The story of Blink Now's beginning has been featured in the Huffington Post, VH1, MTV, DoSomething.org, and many, many other places. And we got to mention, I mean, this is a big deal, Maggie. You did something, I think, very few of us have accomplished. What you had a child and you created your book at the same time, or you finished your book and say, that's a big feat.
Thank you. I'm so excited. It's here. I actually just got my first copy yesterday. Oh, it's real. I made something.
You did make something. You know, I've heard from authors that they say, you know, when they finish a book, it was, I'm sure, a lot of hard work to get to this place. It's almost like having a child. How did it feel to you?
It's definitely right up there with having a child in terms of just grit and difficulty, and a toll on your body and stress. But it was also really, like children, very cathartic and very healing. And it just felt so rewarding to get, you know, all of these emotions, all of these feelings, everything that's been living inside my head onto paper and in a book that you can hold and smell and touch. It's been an amazing day, to be honest. I'm really excited.
Congratulations. We're so happy to celebrate that with you. And I want to say a quick hello to many friends. We see CrossX Fighter Joshua joining us on YouTube Live, as well as all different platforms. Like so many of you joining me live today. Don't be shy. We love to hear from you. Thank you so much, Modern Mom, as well. Let's talk about this, Maggie. I want to hear the backstory. I mean, I've read your bio. It's very impressive. You started at such a young age. Can you start from the beginning and tell us your Yes Factor backstory? Like, when did it seem to click?
Well, I grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey and, you know, was definitely a child of privilege. I had a mom and a dad and lived in a small house on a cul-de-sac, and everybody was going to college. And, you know, I went to public school in a small little town, and all of a sudden I just woke up one morning and was like, wait, I'm about to go make this huge investment in college, and not having any idea who I am or what my purpose is. So that led me on this journey of traveling and leaving New Jersey for the first time in my life and kind of just trying to figure out who I am and what I can do. And I ended up in rural Nepal with a Nepali refugee friend of mine who was also a young girl. And we went back to her village and we just saw so much post-war struggle and so many things in this world that needed to change. And that yes moment for me was on a dry riverbed. I looked up in this Himalayan mountain village and I saw dozens and dozens of children breaking rocks to survive. And they were breaking rocks to sell them for about a dollar as gravel. And this is what they did all day, every day. This is the life of a child porter, child orphan, child laborer. And I was like, I want to do something. And one of the best investments you can make in a child's life is their education. And so we started working with the local community and started a school and a home and a community-based center and initiative around changing the reality for these children.
Wow. And you told me earlier when I asked you how many kids, before we started on air, I said, how many kids do you have? And maybe you could share with us your answer.
That's a very complicated question. Yeah, I have 58 children who call me mom, mother figure to 58 in our home. But we also run a safe home for at-risk adolescent girls who are victims of child trafficking or domestic abuse. And we run a women's center with 260 women who have received training and been a part of our center. And we run a school with over 500 kids who all call me Maggie Mom, with my two biological children as well.
Incredible. And talk to me about this. So I read the backstory. Tell me about the $5,000, where that came from, and why that you consider one of the best investments that you made.
Good question. So, you know, when you're a teen girl in the suburbs of New Jersey, how you make money is you babysit. And I'm one of three sisters. I started babysitting on that cul-de-sac, just hustling it out. I think I started at like $4.50 an hour. And I'd save my babysitting money and my birthday money. And, you know, your parents tell you to save and put it away in an account somewhere. And I did. I had my little savings account at TD Bank. And I turned 18 and I was traveling Nepal and I knew I wanted to do something. And so there happened to be a piece of property for sale for $5,000. And putting kids into school was one part of the solution. But in the hierarchy of needs, kids need a home. They need family, they need support. We needed that center and that base. And so I bought a piece of land with my co-founder, Tope, and my parents wired me over that $5,000 of money. It was the best real estate investment of my life. And that became Coppola Valley Children's Home and School and the start of the Blink Now Foundation, changing the world in the blink of an eye.
Wow. What did your parents say when you said, Mom and Dad, send me this money? I'm going to be doing this, because I imagine this wasn't something they immediately expected from you.
No, I was that kid. I was, you know, editor-in-chief of my yearbook, treasurer of my class, like varsity athlete, just all the things, everything about, I had college written on my forehead. And I think it was a long conversation. It was from this rickety old phone booth on the side of the road in the foothills of the Himalayas. And it was definitely a big moment in my life where I was just, I was just young and I was naive and I didn't see anything. I didn't see any other solution but to stay there and try to solve this problem. And I'm really happy I stayed. Many years later, I walked across that same dry riverbed and there was a bridge and there wasn't a single child breaking rocks. And my parents have come around full circle. They've come, you know, they've embraced the kids and it ended up that I was just really warmly embraced by the local people and we worked together at chipping away at this issue.
And how long were you there? Because I know this was, you left home for this gap year. It changed your life completely. How long does this process take from beginning to end?
Well, the gap year totally became a gap life and a year off turned out to be a year on. And I have been living in Nepal for now 16, 17 years. I just turned 35. So it's been, a part of me grew up there and I love Nepal. It's the most beautiful place on earth. I love the people and I work with a team of 100 other Nepalese and my co-founder Tope. And it's been a really wonderful journey. Not easy by any means. We've learned so much, but we really feel like we've created a model for success when it comes to development and improving the lives of children, making sure their basic, most human needs and rights are met in post-war nations.
What did you learn? What did you learn in this journey? I mean, you mentioned hardship, children, certainly, you know, but talk about Nepal, talk about learning more about working and poverty, hunger, child marriage. I know you talk about this in your book. Can you talk a little bit about sort of your background on that?
I mean, the first thing to note is that you really can't go into a community and a culture that you have no idea about. You don't speak the language. You're an outsider. You can't take your experience from suburban New Jersey and an 18-year-old and go to a rural community in the most food deficit, you know, war-torn region of the world and go fix things. And I think that's kind of the beginning of the book, is that I realized right away that I didn't know the answers to anything. And I had so much to learn. The language, I had to learn from the local community. We had to form a collective and really do true, deep community-based work and change, which takes time. And there were so many cultural differences. And at the same time, I brought in this vision and ideas and questions and curiosity and wanting to help and bring resources in. And so it was just a lot of learning. Like, I'll give you one example. In Nepal, when girls are on their period, they have to sleep in a shed, right? And it's not a simple issue. You can't just be like, well, take the girls out of the shed and everything will be fine. It wasn't that complicated. So I talk about that issue of chalpati and how we navigated that, and talked about just all the learning that I had to do and unlearning that I had to do. The answer in the end of it all is that the local community were the magic bullet and the secret sauce to it all.
So talk about the local community. When they met you, did they say, oh, wow, she's just coming here to visit us, it's her gap year? How did you transition from, yes, I'm an 18-year-old, but yeah, I really want to make change? And were you instantly embraced, or was there a challenge there?
I was humbly and so lovingly embraced. This was the second year of my gap year. I'd been working in India on the refugee side, the Nepali refugee side of the border. And by that time, I'd been taken under the wing of another woman named Prabha, who's running a similar organization. And we were going to the Nepal side of things to see if we could address the issue in Nepal itself. Because once children flee across the Nepali border into India, that's when human trafficking happens, sex trafficking, you know, so many cascading terrible things. So we went to address things on the Nepal side. And I was, like I said, I was considered a little sister. I was brought in under the wing of women there. We came up with thoughts and ideas. We started digging the holes to the foundation of where the home and the center would start. And we just got in, we got our hands dirty. And I was a listener and just helped bring attention and resources to the area. And we all did it together. And luckily, I think I learned right away that I couldn't just change things. I couldn't come in and say, this is right or this is wrong. It was way more gray than that. But just year after year, kind of step by step, we just got to know each other, and it's worked wonderfully.
I love that. So when you see this, you're seeing opportunities. I imagine when you get there, you're seeing the children, you're seeing the opportunities, right? And some things must have frustrated you. I don't understand why things are this way, and I want to make a difference, like sooner rather than later. What were some hiccups along the way that you felt like this isn't right, but it took you maybe longer to solve? Were there issues like that?
100%. And the beginning of this journey was just despair and hopelessness. And this problem is way too big. Like, how do we have 300 million orphan children in our world? How do we have just these absurd numbers, billions of people living below the poverty line? It just becomes so overwhelming. There, as you know, there's just so many issues and problems in our world. But then we really took the granular and started with one child at a time and solving one problem at a time. And what you realize is that in order for a child to thrive in community, it's all about education and love and clean water and kind of like putting and solving the pieces of the puzzle together. The issue of child marriage goes out the window when a girl is enrolled into school and you can keep her and support her in the community and stay in school, right? And I think the game changer for us was getting women involved. You know, women, as Nick Kristoff says, and the Chinese proverb says, hold up half the sky. And they're in control of their communities and their families, and creating the Women's Center and having the backs of women and the support of women to take on these issues organically and from within the community definitely changed the game for all of us.
So kind of take me through this process. You get there, you meet these incredible women. What's the first thing that you decide to build together? Was it the land? Was it like the Women's Center? Was it Children's Center? Mm-hmm. Sort of what became the first priority, and, you know, and what resources were you able to bring in? Were you able to bring in global resources? Like, how did this kind of work?
Good questions. Yeah, we're not, it wasn't very surface. We did have to go very deep. We started with enrolling kids into school. The community was like, education's everything. We figured that out. Then what happened was they needed nutrition, school lunch. Kids who had lost family and didn't have a safe home needed a home. So we launched the home really shortly after that and started digging the foundation and building the home. That intervention has to be made maybe 2% of the time. So we had enrolling kids into school and then the home. And then it became about clean water and health and wellness and mental health and family development, supporting the family. Then we were like, oh, the kids are doing great when they're either at our home or at the school. But when they go off into community with biological, you know, the kids who weren't living full time in the home, they needed more support. So that was the Women's Center. And you can see we kind of just started like putting the model together, the curriculum, and finding the people and the team to help us carry out that strategic vision for the organization. Yeah.
That's incredible. And we'll be right back with Maggie right after the break.
Hi, I'm Kwame Christian, CEO of the American Negotiation Institute, and I have a quick question for you. When was the last time you had a difficult conversation? These conversations happen all the time, and that's exactly why you should listen to Negotiate Anything, the number one negotiation podcast in the world. We produce episodes every single day to help you lead, persuade, and resolve conflicts both at work and at home. So level up your negotiation skills by making Negotiate Anything part of your daily routine.
So then, I mean, think like we take clean water for granted. They have to think about such an, not only where they're going to live, but the, what they're putting into their bodies, right? This is so many different layers. Now the Blink Now organization, we know it's 90% Nepali, 10% where?
International. We do bring in some international experts now and again. We have a amazing guy named Jaden who is Canadian and has his PhD in curriculum development and staff training. We've got myself and a really small team across the U.S. Running the nonprofit side of things. We are a 501c3 here in the U.S. So we're small and mighty, but we're great. Mostly Nepal and North America based. So
amazing. Now let's talk about your book. All right. I know in your book you talk about how you created Blink Now. Can you share a little bit about that story as well?
Yeah, so right away, it became clear that the community knew what the community needed, but what the community didn't have was resources, right? And so I went back to New Jersey thinking, oh, I'll just like babysit my way through this. And I'll, at the end of each week, I would spend my babysitting money at $8 an hour at this point. But it became really clear early on that that wasn't sustainable. And so when I was babysitting, I actually started becoming mentored by these amazing people who would give little tips and hints and started to talk about nonprofits and the whole sector. And I started going to the library and just reading books on development and poverty and why we had failed and what the intricacies of the issues were while I was babysitting. And then became the Blink Now Foundation. That was born out of the idea of creating a nonprofit that would then create resources and pump them into Nepal and our work and our mission on the ground. And I was able to luckily move back to Nepal, continue kind of running the foundation in both places, navigating that world. And luckily the press at that time really had our backs. And I remember Cosmo Girl magazine covered the story and young people started following along. It was kind of before social media, but I had a blog and would share the realities on the ground and stories and like the impact, right? The impact of $5 is so far, $1. Water filtration, a deparasite tablet is 25 cents that can save a child's life. Education, the power of a school uniform and a backpack. It was just mind blowing the interventions that could be made and trying to connect people to that cause and what a difference it would make and how it changes the lives of these kids.
Wow, that's incredible. So how brilliant to do that, to create a blog, right? To share this experience, because you can't just do something in a vacuum and people need to know so they can help support. You know, so where do you call home right now?
Oh my goodness. I keep saying we're going home to Nepal in June. Now I have a four-year-old and she's like, where is home? Is home where we're, where are we sleeping tonight? home is New Jersey. It's Nepal. I married an amazing man named Jeremy who's Canadian. And now I feel like home. We have a little base in Canada with my husband's six siblings. And it's home is the where when you're with the people that you love, as you know. And I still think our home is Nepal with all of our kiddos around.
I love it. And how did you meet your husband? Was he part of this or was he pulled in?
Oh, he got pulled in. For years, everyone was like, how are you ever going to meet someone? You're living in Nepal. What's your dating app going to look like? So like everyone's going to scroll right by you. But I was giving a talk at this amazing place called the Dew Lectures, actually up in your neck of the woods out in the Bay Area. And he was there attending and a friend kind of introduced us and we were complete friends. I left for Nepal 2 days later, we exchanged numbers and we just stayed in touch and ended up falling in love. And he had to, right away, I was like, you have to come to Nepal and understand what you're getting into. Cause this is, you know, mm-hmm. I come with a big package here. And he did. And he's actually a documentary filmmaker. And so we started filming. He's a photographer and taking pictures and putting his skills to good use. And it's been an amazing love story. I love him so much. I'm really lucky.
Aw. How's he feel about the 50 plus kids you have?
He had to ask them permission to when he wanted to propose. And all I heard, I was actually downstairs and they were up. And all I heard was like stampeding and cheering. The kids love him so much. And he loves them. And luckily it was just a really good fit. Yeah.
Wow. This is like Maggie, this is like a movie. I think those of us who are listening, wow, this is incredible. We got to talk about this. I mean, I think many people watching you are inspired by your story. I think a lot of people listening to you are inspired by your story, but they might be thinking, well, you know, it's got to be a lot of challenges running a nonprofit, not to mention a nonprofit that serves communities outside of our borders. What were some of the challenges that you found that sort of surprised you? Like, was it more difficult than you thought, or was it easier than you thought it would be?
Good question. I mean, it definitely grew beyond this little seed that I initially wanted to plant, but there were parts of it that were definitely way harder. Like I go in as a 17, 18 year old, I'm like, why are kids living this way? Why are we accepting this as status quo, that there's this atrocious human suffering of children when there's such simple solutions and fixes to these issues? But then, of course, you know, you get into the nonprofit world and you realize these are really complex issues and they are hard to solve. And running a nonprofit is not easy at all. And I had so much learning to do. So it's been a journey. I think the way that we have been successful all these years is just surrounding ourselves with that dream team, like incredible board of directors, incredible team. All, you know, so much locally focused brilliance in Nepal itself, and just sharing our ideas with others and trying to focus on inspiring others that this is possible and that you don't have to go 8,000 miles away. There are a million causes to support wherever you are. Find something that resonates with your heart. Dig in, take that first step, no matter what the cause is. There's so many problems to solve. And we've got passion and we care, and it's just time to step in and jump in. And that's kind of what we talk about at Blink now.
Yeah, that's what you talked about. And I know this is also a big part of your story, was why it's, you know, in your case in Nepal, why it was so important to employ a really large staff. You know, some people are saying, well, that just seems so daunting. What do you say to that?
One step at a time. Like, this was, you know, we've been at it for 20 years almost at this point. Like, we started really small with this small passionate group. We started all volunteer, and then we slowly grew and we built resources and we built expertise. And like anything, like any startup or any endeavor, whether it's for profit, not for profit, you just start small and you build your layers and you dream big and you have a vision and then you execute.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I know you've talked about this. It's really important when you're looking to help like populations. I know a lot of people right now, we're watching what's happening in the Ukraine. We're really wanting to help out, and maybe our local communities as well. And you talk about making sure that whatever you do, make sure that you help populations ethically. You want to talk a little bit about that?
First of all, I believe in this sector so much. I believe that the world development work is so important, and that it's diplomacy, it's peacekeeping. I believe that beyond borders, when children are raised with equity and opportunity and the chance to survive basic human needs and rights, that creates a better world for everyone. It creates a better economy. I mean, this has been studied by leading economists and peacemakers and global leaders. When you have children loved, nurtured, cared for, fed, given the opportunity at an education, there are ripple effects across the world. Now, that doesn't mean we can just go in and like drop down and impose our ways. I think what it comes down to is that we're, at the end of the day, we're a human family. We all have the same home. We're living on the same earth, and we have a duty and a responsibility to care for each other and to do that as humanely and ethically as we can. That doesn't mean coming in and being like, this is, let me tell you what you need to do to be better. But we have to stand up to, we can't accept that children are hungry in the world. That just has to end. We have resources. We have the ability to end some of these global issues, and we just need to get in and do it too.
So I think, like, we've talked about this before. It's like, I think sometimes change is scary, right? Things are different. And when it's so easy to be fixated in New Jersey or wherever you are and think, well, the center revolves around my neighborhood, right? And that, but you said so importantly that we are one human family. Where do you see your nonprofit, Maggie, in the next 5 years? What do you like want to achieve next?
What we want to do, we feel like our model has really worked. And we don't think it's just this one community in Nepal. We think that there are learnings and blueprints that we can conceptualize and write and kind of export and share with the world. And there are change makers and people doing good everywhere in the US, North America, the African continent, South Asia. So, but there are basic things, like you said, about doing this work ethically and how do you do it in partnership with the community. There are some learnings that I feel like we could share, and some of our model and some of the things that we've pulled and learned from other people, so that we can expedite this process. And yeah, just take it to scale in the sense that here's what we do, this is what works for us, and share it with other leaders and change makers. One of the most common emails that I get is from a girl in Nigeria who has this idea about her community, or Sri Lanka, or India, or Cambodia. Like, I get those emails all the time of just sharing and consulting. And how did you, when you had this problem, how did you solve it? And I think that's the future for Blink now, trying to continue to be a leader in the space and share with others and continue to inspire others to get into their communities and create change wherever that may be.
Okay, Maggie, I got to ask you, why did you name the organization Blink Now? What's the story behind the title?
I was thinking about that. Yes, I think you called it a yes moment or
yes factor. Yeah.
Yes factor. It's, you know, those moments like in the blink of an eye, you just see something so clearly and it changes everything. For me, that was me and Hema on the riverbed. And I just had this blink of an eye moment that changed my life and made me see things. And blink now. Just we can't wait. We don't have the luxury to sit around and wait. Like in the blink of an eye, we can change the world. And that's going to look different for everyone. This is what it looked like for us. But yeah, that's blink now. Let's do this. Let's figure these issues out. We're not going to sleep another day knowing that we're not doing everything we can to create a more peaceful world for our children. They're so worth it. They're so worth it.
They're so worth it. And now you have so many kids. I know you just welcomed another addition to your family. Has motherhood changed you?
Oh, I mean, I've been a mom for a long time now. And yes, it changes you in ways you can't imagine. I think it's the best thing in the world. It was the right, you know, the right path for me. There's just something about children, right? And their innocence and their joy and their purity. I mean, the worst thing in the world could be happening. And you look at a child's face and you feel hope and you feel, oh, we got to keep going. We got to hold on to this, our humanity, and fight for children. And motherhood is that for me. I love every bit of it. I love it.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Maggie. I think, you know, many of us can relate to, we are ready to go have some fun, travel the world, see different places. And a lot has happened in the last couple of years. If you were given an all-expense trip, paid trip to anywhere in the world next week, you're going to go next week just for a single week, where would you go and who would you take with you?
I would take all of my children to Disneyland and just spoil the heck out of them and get them everything they wanted, ride every ride, get the express passes, and just somehow lift them and give them the best memory of their entire childhood.
Amazing. All 58 of them, right?
Yeah, just take over Disneyland.
Amazing. I love it. Well, you know, I guess you're in Southern California right now. I'm in Southern California. Mm-hmm. That would be quite a treat. I feel like those of you who, maybe if you're watching and you have a tie to Disneyland, you know, definitely make a phone call, reach out to Maggie. She would like to hear from you. All right, Maggie. Maggie, second question for you. And I know I really thought about this question and I thought, what would I want to know? You know, running your nonprofit, you have a wish list, I'm sure. You know, many of us have, especially running businesses, nonprofits. If you could invite one person to sit on your board, anybody in the world, who would you want and why?
I would go for Melinda Gates. For sure. One of the big women in philanthropy, Mackenzie, I would want a really strong woman. I've followed the work of Melinda Gates. I've read all of her books, all of her blogs, and she just really gets that investing in girls and women is the future. And she's always been a lighthouse for me. So I'd want her and the Gates Foundation for the ride to invest in Nepal. Going big here.
Going big. I heard you mentioned Mackenzie Scott too. So I'm guessing, you know, why not bring them
all? I was like, which one did I go for? I love them both. They're both killing it right now.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. Now, before we let you go, talk to me about the book. We got to give some love to your book. And I want to know how you came up with the title.
Well, the book Between the Mountain and the Sky, the title was a tough one, but there's this one scene in the book where I'm walking up into this beautiful rural village and I'm reflecting on motherhood and the beauty of Nepal. And I kind of like make a wish or a plea out to the mountain and the sky, and kind of represents Nepal for me. It's like, just, there were so many scenes like coming into Nepal with the Himalayas and the beauty of it all. And that's where we landed with the title. I was also thinking the kids are always like flying kites and you always see images of them up on the rooftop flying their kites. So that was kind of some of the imagery that we had when we were coming up with it.
I love it. And now you can pre-order it. So the book's ready for pre-order. We've included the link for you, Maggie, for our audience to share as well. But thank you so much, Maggie, for your time. And thank you for continuing to inspire so many people and making a difference for, like you said, our neighbors, our human family, our children in this world. So thank you for doing what you do. We appreciate you and we are grateful that you are spending some time with us today, Maggie.
Thank you for having me, Manny.
Your children, my children, all children of the planet are all of our children. We are all one human family. This is the essence of Maggie's message. If this story resonated and touched you, please take a moment and check out Maggie's new book, Between the Mountain and the Sky. And make sure to comment and subscribe to our show. I'd love to hear from you. And to learn more about me, visit winniesun.com. Join me again next week as we share another new episode of Yes Factor with you. Thank you and be well.